Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the curated online streaming cinema that allows you to download the finest films directly to your phone to watch for 30 days. Go to mubi.com/filmstage for your free month trial of Mubi. Ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and I have a baby sleeping next to me. With us today to talk about the Blair, or just Blair Witch, no definite article. I'm so glad that's still a problem I'm having. We have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Yeah! We also have Michael Snydell.
Woo!
Oh, guys, are you ready for this episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because we are talking about so many things on top of Blair Witch. We're going to be super brief with all of them, but I'll just remind you at the top that we give timestamps in the podcast descriptions that we post, and you can use the chapter selection arrows on your player because this is an enhanced podcast. So if you want to skip over Snydell talking about One More Time with Feeling, or me talking about The Vessel, or all of us talking about the Stray Cat Rock series, which is currently on Mubi, you can do that. Why did we think this was a good idea?
I don't think anybody decided that we were going to do all three at once.
We kept talking about doing them, and then we just kind of fell today. But it's fine, because I can't foresee us talking for like 2 hours about Blair Witch alone. So this will be a good time.
Sure.
Yeah, so let me just
good time is
everyone.
Relevant.
Let me just remind
so
everyone.
So bear with us is what we're saying.
Yeah, it'll be fine. We'll be great. I'll keep us moving along. Speaking of moving along, email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, give us a rating and a comment. Find us on Twitter @FilmStageShow and Facebook, The Film Stage Show. I will say again, for the people listening at home, there's a baby next to me. So if you hear any weird noises, I apologize. That's probably the baby. I'll cut out any major distractions that happen. But, the pitfalls of being a family man that does a movie podcast.
Womp womp.
Maybe if she wakes up, I can let her give her opinion on the movies that we watched together. Because every movie that I talk about today will be a movie that I watched in the presence of my 3-month-old daughter.
Wow.
Yeah.
A budding cinephile.
I know. She was fussing in the movie theater during the trailers, and I'm there with my wife, and my wife is holding her, and I just turn to my daughter and say, "You are going to grow up in a movie theater. You better get used to this."
That's pretty great.
Oh, Jesus. All right. So that is that for the housekeeping and the intros. Let's really get started on this cavalcade of stuff we're going to talk about. As you know, we are sponsored by Mubi. Mubi is the curated online cinema. Every day they introduce a new film that you can watch for 30 days, download to your iPhone, iPad. We're apparently also sponsored by Apple. And you can watch them on your phone without the use of Wi-Fi. So we kept plugging Mubi. And then finally we were like, you know, why don't we talk about a movie that's on Mubi? Let's choose something that's really crazy and out there. And it's going to be freaking awesome. So, Mubi is currently having a retrospective on the Stray Cat Rock series. So we're going to, well, we were going to talk about a single film from that series, but then some miscommunication happened, and Bill and I watched one, and Mike watched a different one. So we're just going to talk about the series as a whole, kind of.
How many are on Mubi right now?
Four.
There are three right now. I just checked.
Isn't there a fourth one coming?
Yes, there is, but there's three at the moment, I'm saying.
Yes. Okay. All right, so before we get into that, let me finish this movie plug and let everyone know that if you'd like to watch any of the two movies that we're now about to talk about and get on there in time to see the fourth one, go to mubi.com/filmstage. You will get a free month trial of MUBI. And it's going to be awesome, and you're going to love it, and you're going to tweet at us and say thank you.
So much great stuff.
It's just such great stuff. We had a hard time choosing what to watch because there's 30 great things to pick from. But we picked the Stray Cat Rock series. Mike, you said you did some research on this, so give us a quick intro to what this is.
Sure. So what I did research on is, so first I'll point you, there's actually a really good piece on MUBI right now, on MUBI, on their notebook part of their site, and it's called The Stages of Revolution and Molotov Cocktails, the Stray Cat Rock series, and it's by Josh Cabrita. So I apologize, Josh, because I'm going to pretend like what I'm about to say is coming from me and not you. But the point is, the Stray Cat Rock series was in the early 70s. It was a pop exploitation series that at the beginning was meant to be the Japanese version of Roger Corman's biker film, The Wild Angels. But so it started as just kind of a quick cash in on, you know, 70s counterculture through a Japanese lens, but it became a lot more complicated, as we're going to talk about here. The first film is like a pretty down and dirty gangster film with some interesting reversals, like a lot of female protagonists and some political undercurrents and some interesting things in that sense. And then the film that Brian and Bill watched, it deals specifically with some racial issues of Japan. Yeah. There were five parts between this at the beginning of the 70s. And guys, should I just go right into the one I watched?
Yeah, give us a quick rundown of the plot and what you thought about it.
Sure. So the one I watched is, it's the first one, guys, the first one. And it's called Stray Cat Rock, Delinquent Girl Boss, which is a great name for a movie.
When you just said what the title was, when you were like, hey, we should watch this, I remember distinctly thinking, is this a documentary about like a girl rock band? Because I was like, oh, Delinquent Girl Boss, that's awesome. Like, I would listen to that band.
That is a pretty good band name. Yeah. And there's, you know, it's about two rival girl gangs and also a group called the Suyu Group, which is just kind of this corporate facade that's just basically an organized crime group. But what's so great about this movie is, besides for this whole series being Tarantino's wet dream, is that it has one of the most like active cameras I've ever seen. The camera is as much a character in the movie as any of the characters. And, you know, the plot isn't super well developed. It's a lot of times just people who look really cool sitting around listening to psychedelic rock music. But on the other hand, it's a lot of people looking really cool and psychedelic rock music. So for 80 minutes of your time, I would say it's worth it, even if it's even if not that much comes out of it. It exists in such an interesting world, and it's just kind of a fun 90 minutes. I don't know, Brian and Bill, yours might be a little bit less fun. Can you talk about that one?
I would say, Bill, I don't know about you, but I had a lot of fun with this movie.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it too. I think it's definitely, it's got some contemplation kind of going on. It definitely has a lot more racial issues that it's kind of dealing with and touching on, and it's not subtle about it at all. Like, ooh, like at some point, various characters call other various characters half breeds.
Yeah,
and I was just like, oh, that's what this movie is about. Okay, yeah,
so the movie Bill and I watched was Stray Cat Rock: Sex Hunter, which is not indicative of the storyline.
No.
So I was deeply confused for a bit. Yeah. Basically, we got Mako, who is the main character, I guess, and she leads.
Mm-hmm. She is also in mine as well.
Yes, I would assume that. I don't think their gang has a name, but
the ladies, yeah. But they're dealing with the Eagles.
Yeah, the Eagles have a name, and I kept expecting them to call themselves the Stray Cats. But I guess they're not. But so Mako and her gang are hanging out, and they get into a gang war, basically, with the Eagles, which are a bunch of guys, because the Eagles are, like, trying to ethnically cleanse this city of what they call the half-breeds, which are...
Jeez.
This is the thing. I don't have enough of a cultural background to really understand, like, what's happening, but the way it seems to me, and Bill, let me know if you agree, is that, like, American GIs, specifically African-American GIs, came over, had sex, obviously, with Japanese women, and these guys hate the offspring of that union.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's a song by The Clash about... now I can't remember it. I think it's called Straight to Hell. And it's about that whole thing. Like, children of mixed-race parents during or after a war and what mm-hmm. they have to go through. And this movie takes that, turns it into a grindhouse gang war film that also involves something that is literally referred to as a rape party.
Yeah.
Now, saying that, Bill, you can back me up on this. It's not particularly, like, gross. Like, this, for all the stuff that's in this movie, it's very palatable.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's easy to digest kind of I would say exploitation kind of film.
Right, because you say exploitation, and I tend to think, like, torture porn.
Left House on the Left.
Yeah, but it's not. It's, like, it's got that anger to it, but it doesn't revel in images that would make you turn away. And I think that that's to its credit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think about this film?
And I think the other part of it is we have to remember what era we're watching this film from. And, you know, the torture porn and everything like that really, really got started probably in the 90s, early 2000s,
right,
where they just went all in, right?
That was going back to the 70s and things like Cannibal Holocaust and,
yeah,
you know.
That's
sure, but
thinking.
But I don't know if Japan specifically was all that well known for it back then. Now today, you know, we have some Korean cinema filmmakers and maybe some Japanese as well that
I was gonna say
that
Bill
really embrace, really embrace this shit. And so, yeah, I'd be really curious to kind of see their take on a film like this, because they would just be balls out.
With you saying like that about it being like balls out, like, I think there's something to be said for this kind of whimsical violence and wrongness of everything.
It's like detached.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's weird because we're going through a thing in our culture right now where in, like, cultural conversation and in art, we're trying to bring up uncomfortable topics and talk about marginalized populations. Mm-hmm. But we always do it in a really earnest, sometimes treacly and cloying kind of way. And I would love for some artist out there to do what this movie or this series of movies does. Like, take a serious issue and then just, like, turn it into something nuts. And I'm not talking about, like, Ryan Murphy American Horror Story type. Like, I want...
Okay. But, I mean, isn't this this... I mean, Snydell started it off...
To an extent, guys.
Snydell started it off by saying this is Tarantino's wet dream. And, yeah, I think the filmmaker... Come on, Brian.
I don't know, Bill. Like,
the Nazis and then black power and then
I was gonna say in Django Unchained I can see that more than even Inglourious Basterds or The Hateful Eight. Like, he's still being serious. It doesn't feel as like gritty, sure, energetic, sure, or fun.
Well, because
Kill Bill is what I was specifically. I mean, I know that's an obvious comparison since it goes back to so many kung fu and exploitation films.
Yeah.
But like, even in the rhythms and it's like bitterly funny humor, it was hard not to see, especially even the camera movements in this. I don't know about your film, but like at times it felt like the cameraman was either seasick or like going along with the music.
Yeah.
There was almost never a tripod, and that absolutely like brings in the immersiveness.
Yeah,
quality.
I would say that's how ours was.
Yeah, there were some sequences that definitely. There were some handheld sequences that I could tell, and then there were some other things that were kind of interesting the way it was shot. But I don't know. This film is definitely zany, and like you're saying, Brian, I think part of its zany charm is that it isn't that brutal in its message. It's almost kind of comic, and it's almost sad in a way. Of how comic it kind of is. I think something has to be said for how comedy can kind of bring light to kind of tragic circumstances, whether it's viewpoints or things like that, because mm-hmm. it can kind of make you laugh at something and then you realize like why you're laughing at it and you're like, that's not exactly something to be laughing at, right? And there's certain kind of, you know, and you can hear it in kind of the music and the way they kind of play it, is that you might laugh at it and, you know, you might realize, oh shit, I'm a terrible person. Like, why?
Well, the
am
weird
I
thing
at?
About this is in like almost every scene, there's, you know, that like instrumental. It's not Philly Soul, because Philly Soul's after this, but that's what it feels like. It's that, you know, those booming horns and the. You know, the drum fills that, like, even when you're seeing horrible things, like, there's a torture sequence in my film that is, like, backed by these horns and the drum solo, and it, you know, builds with this staccato editing and, like...
Well, that's, like, in ours, so like, it had that same thing, and it's just, like, this movie just oozes cool. Like, mm-hmm. with the music and the outfits. Like, I fell in love with the main character when I saw her in, like, her Western vest and her blouse with her like wide brimmed black hat.
And she is like a fairly big pop star, right?
Is she? I have no
idea.
Yeah,
I believe so.
Yeah.
Interesting. So. But I don't know. There was just, it because again, like it's a movie that has this, it's like snapping its fingers cool while it's dealing with some really heavy material in a way that gets the point across while still just being like outrageously fun. And it seems like we don't often allow ourselves to have like fun with that stuff anymore.
Sure.
Like it really felt like a super transgressive film for this time. And it was made almost 50 years ago.
Does this one play with American iconography? I know we talked about the Coke bottles a little bit. Yeah. Apparently that changes in each different installment, but I'm just curious. Does it?
Oh, it's got.
Is it playing with some American ideas then?
Yeah, Bill, what? There's the Coke bottles. There's the American mm-hmm. Jeeps that seem to have been reclaimed for civilian use. And then there's just straight up white guys in it, too.
Yeah, that are called Harry's. Like at one point a character, yeah. At one point a guy, a character in the film says, "I'm not gonna let him have or let Harry have my woman or something like that." And you're just like, "What was his name, Harry?" I don't remember his name being Harry. I guess you're just calling all of them Harry. Okay, all right.
But no, it's I would say, you know, out there listening, like this is some real interesting stuff. It's. I was saying when we were talking about this, I wanted to watch a different movie because I said that Asian cinema is like a super huge blind spot for me. And so I'm glad we got to watch this. And, you know, it's also from the 70s, which is everyone keeps kind of wishing that we could get back there in terms of movie making. And this is, like I said, a transgressive, super cool, just saturated in the time story that I can't wait to watch the rest of these.
Yeah, no, same. I'm definitely going to watch the rest of them.
Damn right. All right, so that is Stray Cat Rock, Delinquent Girl Boss, and Sex Hunter, which, again, I don't know why that's the title they chose. But yeah, it's great. You should check it out and let us know what you think. If you'd like to, you can see them on Mubi. And again, that is Mubi, MUBI.com/filmstage. Get your free month trial and check out all these crazy films.
The other one that's on there is called Wild Jumbo, which is equally as great a title.
Wild Jumbo?
Wild Jumbo.
I can't wait. It's probably, again, like nothing about anything wild or jumbo. So that's that for the Stray Cat Rock. Michael Snydell, you saw a film that was out very limited. Why don't you tell us about it real quick?
Sure, sure. Last weekend, so it was first announced that it was going to be one day only for the...
What the hell is that?
Sorry, guys. This is Chicago. What the hell was I saying? Oh, okay. It was originally going to be one day only, but there's a Nick Cave documentary film called One More Time with Feeling. And it's Andrew Dominik, who did The Assassination of Jesse James and Killing Me Softly. And this is a concert film that's not... concert film isn't really accurate. What it is really is it's following Nick Cave in the making of the Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds' latest album, Skeleton Tree, which is a fantastic album in itself. But what's important about it is that in the last year, Nick Cave's son passed away when he fell off a hill, I believe. I believe his son was on LSD or it was some hallucinogenic drug. I mean, not that it's relevant. But so this documentary, One More Time with Feeling, is just it's in black and white and filmed with a 3D camera, which already sounds kind of contradictory. But what's so interesting about the film is that, like so many films, or unlike so many films about grief, it knows that there's not an easy way to encapsulate the way people process loss. And about 10, 15 minutes in, and Nick Cave is struggling with the realization that there's no, you know, song he can write. There's no combination of words that he can write that's going to make this, you know, tragedy of his son passing make any more sense. And that's what's so beautiful about the film is that it knows from the first frame that there's no way to make this, you know, be that closure. And by having it be almost freeform and you know, there's plenty of moments where it goes in between just having this beautiful, rigorous style to people interrupting and just asking about whether the camera's on. And it's that combination of a very personal, ambitious vision for a music film, as well as that raw conversational quality that really makes this something really special. It's really one of my favorites of the year. I'm not sure when it's coming other places. I hope it comes to way more theaters. I have to think it's coming to streaming at least sometime soon. But if you get the chance, it's called One More Time with Feeling, and it's really worth a look.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, so it's become an in-joke now on this podcast, outside of actually recording the podcast, that I continuously say I should have moved to Eugene, California, because I wanted to see One More Time with Feeling, and I couldn't, because for some reason DC didn't get a slot on this thing that was happening, but Eugene, California did. So if you live in Eugene, California and got a chance to see this, please tweet me and let me know how it was. Because I only live in the nation's capital. We don't get this movie.
I guess they just don't think you all are cinephiles.
You know, it's funny, Bill, you're absolutely right. DC is really lacking in culture. Like, we don't have shit. I don't even know if we have a film festival. Like, that's how pointless we are on a cultural level. Anyway.
So, real talk, Brian. Real talk.
Bill, sometimes I just get upset. I just get upset about where I live and how I... It doesn't matter. Fuck it. We're gonna move
Bill,
on.
Did you get this movie? I was just curious.
It did play near me.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, my closest one was literally, I think, in New York City. So...
Well, I hope it comes to more theaters.
I'm sure it won't. So here's what I want to talk about. Currently in DC, speaking of DC, for some reason, we have the AFI Silver Theater. They took over the Silver Theater in Silver Spring, revamped it. It's super beautiful. If you're here, go see it. It had a premiere for its Latin Film Fest of a film called The Vessel, which is out now in limited release. And this is a great movie, so I just wanted to plug it a little bit. It is from Julio Quintana, writer and director, and it actually stars Martin Sheen, which is weird, because primarily the movie is in Spanish, and Martin Sheen, fluent in Spanish, which I know is something that's, I don't think that's a secret, because, you know, Emilio Estevez and all that, like, they're of a family, but he's the only one who goes by Estevez. My daughter is super excited that we're talking about The Vessel finally. I don't know if you can hear her. But yeah, this is a great movie. It's produced by Terrence Malick. That's kind of its claim to fame. And it's about a village in, like, an unnamed South American country. Spanish-speaking at the very least, where a wave destroyed the elementary school and killed all of the children and washed them out to sea. And it's years later, and the town still has not recovered. The elementary school is still a shambles. No one has had any children. And it's about this priest, Father Douglas, played by Martin Sheen, and a young man named Leo, played by Lucas Quintana, and the way that their lives are kind of going on and how they're dealing with things, especially after something happens to Leo that many believe to be a miracle. If you love the visuals of Terrence Malick, but feel that his movement away from narrative clarity has been an issue, this is the movie for you. It is painterly and Malick-esque in its visuals, but it has an actual narrative drive with characters who, like, have scenes of dialogue that play into a story that you're supposed to follow. And it's really good. It's an interesting examination of grief and religion and the healing process. So if it is playing around you, I heavily suggest that you go see it.
It sounds like a double feature with One More Time with Feeling, honestly.
Yeah, it could be. Both involve people dealing with dead children. Which is, like, just the worst double feature now that I think about it. Also, a really creepy thing to say is I'm rocking my daughter trying to make her stop howling with joy at the sound of my voice. Which is honestly a great problem to have, because she used to just scream whenever I held her. So, let's move on into our feature review. And that is Blair Witch. Which is directed by Adam Wingard and written by Simon Barrett. This is a sequel to the Blair Witch Project, not Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. I know, it's crazy. Anyway, so let's listen to the trailer and then talk about this movie.
What is that?
The guy who uploaded this video said it was from a tape he found in the Black Hills woods. I think that might be my sister.
You really think your sister could still be out there after all these years?
If there is any chance that I could find out what happened to her, I need to try.
So, the Blair Witch Project, when it came out, didn't invent the concept of the found footage film, but it truly kickstarted a genre revival in America that has not stopped to this day.
Mm-hmm.
No one had really done it that way before, and no one has really done it as well since. So when a movie that released a trailer under the title of The Woods came out, with a bunch of glowing reviews, or I guess I should say pull quotes, people were excited. And then when at Comic-Con it became clear that this was actually called Blair Witch and was a sequel to the Blair Witch Project, people became even more excited. Let's see if it was worth it for them. I'll just start off by giving a brief synopsis. I mean, it's pretty simple. This guy, James, is the brother of Heather, who was the protagonist, I guess you could say, of the Blair Witch Project. He believes that his sister may still be in the woods, or that he at least can find out what happened to her. And he goes out with a bunch of friends to look for her. Now, this is, again, a found footage movie, and there's a lot more footage to be found this time, because all of his friends have... Hold on, my daughter's having an issue.
I can kind of take it. All of his friends have...
Oh, yeah. What? Well, I was going to say, all of his friends have little earpiece cameras, and then they also have...
which definitely is bullshit. Those are definitely Bluetooth earpieces.
Yeah, they're super awkward.
Whatever.
They've got those. They've got a drone, so they can take, like, helicopter shots and orient themselves. Also, their earpiece cameras have, like, GPS in them, so I guess they can track each other.
Yes.
And... okay. Bill, you and I are going to have fun talking about this, aren't we? And then they've also got a DSLR camera, and they hook up with two other people, locals to the city of Burkittsville, or the town of Burkittsville, I guess you could say. And they go out into the woods to try to find his sister, and shenanigans ensue. So, Bill... I'm so excited by the derision that you were heaping on this, just talking about the setup and their equipment, that I would love for you to go first.
Sure. I do think the original needs to be kind of set up a little bit more than that. They actually, so this came out in 1999, and the distributors actually set up an online website. They did like a fake mockumentary.
Yeah, that played on the Sci-Fi Channel,
yeah,
didn't it?
On the Sci-Fi Channel. So they had a website literally dedicated to this fake Blair Witch, like the town and the curse and things like that. So if you were like, oh, let me like, I don't even know how big Google was back then. It's hard to wrap my head around what 1999 was like. But
Bill,
like,
I'll give you this.
Say,
I don't think that Google existed back in 1999.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure you were looking at like Lycos back then.
So like imagine going to BlairWitch.com, right? And being like, oh, I wonder what this crazy shit's all about. And then finding like footage and finding like all these reports about the town and like all this crazy history. And you'd be like, oh, this is crazy. And then you pop in the I know it was on VHS. I know that's how I watched it. But
yeah,
I figure maybe Blu-ray, or not Blu-ray, DVD was back then as well. But yeah, so you pop in your VHS and you start watching it. And, you know, probably halfway through the movie, you're like, holy shit, what is this? So yeah, this is definitely one of the first films that really kind of took that mantle on and ran with it to the point where it was like... This can't be done again. You know, it's not something that can ever be repeated, because people can just Google it now, and you know, they can Google like Blair Witch Project spoilers and just find all the spoilers about it too. So it's not like
to add to what you're saying, Bill, the Blair Witch Project was made by like five people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it was the two directors and writers who the entire thing was basically improvised. They would give these people coordinates to follow on a GPS, and they'd say kind of like, you know, roll with it. And then when they'd get to the place, each of them would have a film canister that would have their sides, you know, for what they're supposed to do. And then they would just film. And there was no thought for composition. There was no nothing. It was these two guys basically fucking with three people in the woods and then taking
the purest form of cinema.
Yeah. Taking what those people shot and regardless of like quality, editing it into a narrative.
Yeah.
So like nowadays you could do that. And that's really the only way you could make a film that has the same impact, because like people are following productions and like, you know, God, just look at what happens with Game of Thrones, where like people are posting about casting calls in small Spanish villages. And like, there's no level of secrecy that you can keep like that anymore.
It's really tough. It's really, really tough. And so in back then, it was really kind of a unique experience to watch this, I'm sure, in theaters, you know, but especially, you know, even by the time it was released on VHS, and it was only released the same year that it came out. So, you know, people have this idea that, oh, it's only nowadays that films are released the same year. No. I mean, it was back then in 1999, too. And in fact, the crazy thing is that this film was one of the most successful. That's what it's been kind of touted as for a while. I think I'm pretty sure. Paranormal Activity has supplanted it, but
so.
It was one of the most successful independent films of all time, just based on sheer budget and then how much money it made.
Because the budget was I can't remember, honestly, I was going to say 50 to 60 thousand.
Yeah, here it says 60,000, and apparently they spent about $25 million on marketing and things like that. But yeah, so I mean, ultimately, the film was made on $60,000 and then it grossed 248. So, I mean, it was a pretty big success. And
248 million.
Yeah, 248 million. And then, so this film was released in 1999 in July. And literally, Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2, came out in 2000. That's how quickly they turned around and tried to capitalize on this film in particular. And
now they've waited 16 years to try again. Well,
like, it has to be said that Blair Witch 2 was
terrible.
Kind of it was very much panned. It was a critical just drubbing, but the film was made off of $15 million and it ultimately made $47 million. So it was like, you know,
I mean, it's not a good movie
success.
Though. And it's a sequel that is not even
kind of become a cult item though, hasn't it?
Or it's become a cult item, I think, because it's a weird sequel because it exists in our universe while also somehow incorporating the things from the film's universe. So it's very weird. But so
let me read the soundtrack, some of the people that are in the soundtrack, right?
POD. Bill. We're talking about Blair Witch. Like what
I know,
happening?
That's what I'm saying. We're talking about the second one. So
no, we're talking about the current one.
Oh, okay. So I guess we've moved on. Okay. Cool. All right.
You've successfully set up the Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
And its impact and how it's different. And now we're talking about this one.
Okay.
At the Drive-In was on the Blair Witch 2 soundtrack, huh?
Michael Snydell.
I'm telling you, like, the soundtrack is bananas.
We're not talking about that. We can do baffling movie soundtracks another time, which actually is an excellent idea, and we need to write that down.
Oh, man, yes.
All right, anyway. So, Bill Graham.
Okay.
All about the original in mind. What did we think of Blair Witch, this actual sequel?
So, it's been a while since I watched the original film. To be honest with you, I don't even know if I've watched it twice. I think maybe I've seen snippets of it and things like that. It's curious because the film really hasn't, like, I don't see it on TNT. I don't see it on like anytime they do horror movie marathons on like AMC or things like this is just not a film that pops up. So it hasn't been something that I've been able to catch again without specifically seeking it out. So it's been kind of curious how that's kind of played out. This film feels very much like the exact same setup an execution of the original. It does have a little bit more high-tech gadgetry and things like that. But, I mean, ultimately, we all know that as much gadgetry and as many things that they're going to bring in, none of it's going to go right, right? I mean, this is a horror film. We're not stupid as an audience. We know, oh, great, cool, you have GPS? Yeah, that shit ain't going to work when you get in the woods. And so a lot of it is predictable in what it does. I found it curious. It's about an hour and 45 minutes, and which is pretty much smack dab at the same runtime as the original. And I think
the other one's 80, I believe.
Okay. And it's interesting because this film, it almost doesn't wear out its welcome, but that depends on how on board you are with it to begin with. I think there are some pretty decent scares in it, and that is ultimately what you go into a film like this to kind of feel and succeed at. And I feel like it does a decent job at that, but overall, it just feels like such a rehashing of the original, and it feels like such a retread that there's also moments where you can see that certain things just don't pan out and they don't kind of go anywhere. I'm talking specifically about one character's leg issue. And it literally goes absolutely nowhere. And I was really caught off by that because they were doing a pretty decent job of kind of tying in a lot of things, and then all of a sudden they're just like, nah, we don't have time for that. So there are the film, I think, is just a bit more brash and louder than the original. And yeah, I swear to you, when I was watching this film, I could feel the tables in my theater vibrate. I was like, wow, they turned. Yeah. Cause I was eating at the Alamo.
Oh,
and like they, the tables were vibrating and I was like, holy shit. They really pumped up some bass in this. Those documentary cameras really, really got that shit down.
Those Bluetooth headset cameras have fantastic stereo audio capturing capabilities.
They do. Man, I was very proud. I was very, very happy about that. But I don't know. I hate to shit all over this film because I do really like the filmmakers behind it. I think Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett are really good guys. They've made some of my favorite horror films in the last few years, whether it's The Guest, whether it's I'm blanking on the other one.
You're next.
And even, I mean, with the VHS series, I enjoyed their contributions to that. But man, this is, I wish they just would have done so much more with what they had available. I think the last 30 minutes of the film gets into some interesting territory, but it's a rehash of what we've already seen. So yeah.
All right, Michael Snydell.
So, I should say this up front that I've seen a lot of found footage, but I had not seen Blair Witch Project. So prior to this review, obviously, I watched it, and per my co-host's suggestions, I watched it in the dark on my laptop with headphones.
Headphones in.
Yes. And I'm sorry?
I said headphones in.
Oh, and headphones, yes. And, you know, I didn't have the experience of being scared. Like, I was feeling the atmosphere, but what I really loved about it is how good it is of a simulation of being lost. The extent to which the three main characters in the original Blair Witch, how believably they get angry at each other as things just keep escalating over and over and over again, is It's great. And it's
the scene where it's something, the guy says that he threw the map in the river.
Oh my God. It's so great. Cause it's so fucking believable. Like these people are, they're not super fleshed out, but wow, I was really into their conversations, even when it was about absolutely nothing. And I think that says a lot about just how much the medium is the message in, you know, the original Blair Witch Project.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, I went into Blair Witch, and immediately after I was like, man, this really did not get anything that the original understood. You know, from things like the obvious thing is just the way that time works in the original is so ingenious, because at a certain point you really don't have a sense whether it's been days or nights. And so what I'm saying is that, like, Blair Witch messes up a lot of things. Bill is absolutely right. There's a lot of missed opportunities here, but I gotta be honest, as I've kind of seen the actual reviews come out, and I've seen a number of people who called it the worst film, one of the worst films of the year, I don't think it's bad. I think it is bad when viewed in light of its legacy, but you know, it as a extended VHS skit, or not skit, vignette, for instance, I think it's okay. And I guess what I just say about it is there's a lot of things that really just feel kind of half-baked from the mythology. You guys already mentioned the leg, and I'm sure we'll get a little bit more into that.
Spoilers,
but even just the you have so many different kinds of technology, and it's almost none of it is used in a way that
yeah, particularly the drone. You're just like, oh, you are so useless. Like, what is the point of you? I don't understand.
Yeah, no,
someone should have brought flares.
I think it says a lot about the film that the most unique aspect, which I won't mention until the spoilers, has nothing at all to do with any advancements in technology.
Yeah.
It has to do with them trying to do something with the mythology and trying to weaponize that mythology. But I think this is okay. This is not anywhere near as interesting as something like Unfriended. I don't know where you guys are at Unfriended. I really liked that one last year, but I wanted this to do more, but it's perfectly serviceable.
Yeah.
Strongly disagree. Here's a pull quote for you, Mike. One of the worst films of the year. Oh God. All right. So I am from Maryland. So when the Blair Witch Project came out.
Oh, are we talking about the original now?
Yeah. Just for a moment. So
okay.
When the Blair Witch Project came out, it was cool because it was like, oh shit, I live in Maryland. And I actually one time camped by Burkittsville. And my daughter's super excited to hear that. So for me,
you're a crazy person.
There's a lot going on here that's not so much important to me, but like that I kind of took a little bit of pride in. And this movie, it's like a textbook reenactment of everything that everyone always says they hate about sequels, but they decided to do it anyway. You know, Bill, you were talking about in the original, like how small it was and how secret it was, and how Michael, you were saying it feels like you're getting lost in the woods. And
yeah,
in the original movie, you felt these people going out and doing this thing. It was a documentary. They were going out to do a documentary. We were watching, for like the first 20 minutes, their documentary. And then things start to go wrong, even as they're sort of still trying to do this documentary. And this movie has that same problem that every other film that tries to do this has, where you never believe these people are trying to do a documentary. Like, when they're getting ready and stuff, I'm not thinking, here's this band of travelers who are trying to do something. I think, sure, here are a bunch of people going into the woods to die. Like, there's no verisimilitude to their quest, and their recording feels like it's just an excuse to have cameras there, when if you just made a normal movie, you could do it anyway. You're not selling me on the conceit that this
That's
is
what's
stuff.
So awkward about Lisa's character is that her motive changes without it actually being recognized as changing. It's right. changing just because the movie has changed.
Exactly. And her friend James, who's Heather's brother, at some point says, "This is what I came here to do." And I was just like,
sure.
When did I get? Yeah. Oh, right. That was in the first 5 minutes of the movie. But like, and there's so many cameras, where in the original there was like three, and the people stayed near each other. But in this movie, you have so many people going so many places that even the concept of this being a found footage film starts to decay around you.
Yeah.
Because you're like, did the witch gather up four different earpieces and a drone and a DSLR camera and then a DV camera from like 1998 and then bundle it together for like, oh, I'm going to want to watch these later. And I guess the other problem I have is it doesn't feel as real. And so I can't view it as a sequel, even in an aesthetic sense, because in that movie, those people got disgusting. Like, just because they're out there, because they had to live in the woods, they looked dirty and unwashed and gross, and I could smell them through the screen because I was a Boy Scout and I've camped in those woods, so I had a very visceral connection to what they were going through. And in this movie, it's the same that it's in every teenage slasher movie, where Lisa looks fucking fantastic throughout this entire movie. she gets up in the middle of the night and crawls into this guy's tent, and I'm just like, that is a Victoria's Secret commercial happening in front of me, with her perfectly curled hair and her shirt just off of one shoulder. And it's just like, in the original, they were covered in denim and flannel and wrapped up tight and like wearing shitty wool hats.
And yes, that was like, also 1999, though. That was the fashion of the
but
times.
Who
I see what
go
you're saying
out
about
dressed like this to do this. Like, you're not selling me on the reality.
You're unfamiliar with camping, though. I mean, you're not going to be thinking, maybe I shouldn't just wear a hoodie and jeans.
I would do a little...
I haven't camped very often, and I'm not going to know what the fuck to wear while camping.
Yeah, but I'm not going camping to, like, stay out in the woods and, like, go potentially get lost. I'm going camping to, like find a little clearing where my car is, like, 5 feet the other direction, and then pop a squat and then like make a campfire.
Yeah, I got the sense that the original movie, those people, they had camped before. They knew survival tactics.
Yeah.
Even if it's just knowing how to use a compass or a map, that shows that they're far more adept than the character.
Goes to like, maybe before you decide to buy all this fucking camping gear, maybe you should learn how to pop a tent. Like, what the
Bill,
fuck
that's,
are you doing?
That's such a good point, because it's like they all went to the same REI, stood in the same aisle, and bought the same brand of everything.
Yeah.
And it's just it's not selling me on the reality, and it's just, it was annoying at a certain point. Like, when they said this is like a sequel to the Blair Witch Project, was I wanted another one of those. I wanted it to feel real. Like, you can say whatever you want about the Blair Witch Project. It's not actually scary, all this other stuff. But, like, you can't say it doesn't feel real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a tactile kind of feel to it, that which is why it was so easy to sell so many people on that it was real, right? Was there was this kind of tactile feel to it, and there was this kind of sense of, yeah, but like a lot of the mistakes they're making are mistakes that like normal people would make. A lot of the mistakes in this film aren't mistakes that normal people would make. They're things that dumb people would make, and it's to push the narrative forward. I mean, at some point, I can't remember his name. I think it's James. He walks away from the woods or their little campsite to go gather wood, and I'm like, how far
Peter.
Did you fucking
that's,
go?
That's Peter, yeah.
Peter. How far did you go? Did you go like an hour that direction? Like, how can't you get back? Why? What is wrong with all the woods around you? Why can't that be kindling?
Well, Bill, I don't know. Again, if you're not familiar with, I can't believe I'm defending these people, but all right. I'm just saying, like, I would not know what to do in that situation.
You're saying that
if I was camping,
your preservation instinct wouldn't tell you, like, I should stay in eyesight.
Yeah.
It's fucking pitch black out. I'm going to walk 40 minutes in that direction and get what, like,
he doesn't leave when it's pitch black. Okay, there's dumb shit, but this is one thing where I'm not gonna.
But he is literally yelling and he is running, and none of the campsite people can hear him.
And now
how is
the
that
question?
Possible?
The question becomes, like, ooh, is that the Blair Witch?
Sure.
Doing that, but like, it's impossible to tell because again, in the original, it felt real. Like, these were real things happening. And so when the weird stuff... That's why in the original, a pile of rocks was horrifying. Mm-hmm. Because it felt real. Like, I have gone on camping trips and shot video of those camping trips. And it felt like the Blair Witch Project. And in this movie, like, well, it's just too pristine. Like, you've got to dirty it up. You've got to make it less good. Like... like I said before, it was frustrating to me that these people come out with Blair Witch and they say, you know, we were trying to get back to that original, and they didn't do the original. Like, you should have just done that again. Give us that feeling.
Guys,
but, like, don't have this obviously scripted, CGI-laden... Like, it's not getting lost in the woods. It's not... this fear that there's nothing out there and you're just not suited to this. It's there's something moving in a woman's foot or a tent is ripped into the air. Like, there's nothing tactile there. It's just a series of loud noises with shoddy camera work excusing just insane. There's a point where someone literally says everyone should stop doing that because she keeps getting jump scared by people coming out of the woods.
Guys, I think one thing that we should talk about, which is interesting, one thing I was thinking about is, you know, in a big picture sense, I think one thing that's weird, or not weird, but one thing that should be distinguished, and this does not eliminate any of the inherent issues of the script or things like that, but there is something to be said for the fact that Blair Witch, you kept talking about how it doesn't, you know, it feels dirty. You feel it feels real. But one thing that's becoming an ongoing problem with found footage as it becomes more of a cottage industry, that's not the word I'm looking for here. As it becomes more mainstream and studios are willing to throw more and more money, you're running into a problem where the technicalities does get rid of any of those unknowns. And, you know, it's something to be said that, like, you know, I'd heard so much about how the original Blair Witch Project, how it can give people headaches and, you know, with shaky cam and things like that. But in this, like, even when it's doing whip pans and moving all over, it's like I wasn't feeling sick because it's so crisp because of just the overall quality of the cameras. And I think a lot of so the things that you are mentioning are symptomatic of what happens when you try to bring something like found footage that's already rooted in such a I don't know. I'm starting to make generalizations here, but I think that there is something to be said about what Blair Witch says about the coming problems of found footage. Well, they've been problems for the last few years as well. But
I think a lot of people are prognosticating that, you know, the found footage genre is kind of dying and this and that. But I mean, sure, there are the wrecks of the world. There are the paranormal activities that continue to show that these films can be done, and they can be done really well.
The Visit only made like $100 million, though, worldwide. And that was a, you know, for whatever you say about M. Night Shyamalan, he's a person who people are interested in what he does.
But that's not that one.
I think less and less now.
Yeah, that was his comeback. I mean, that was a big get for him. Like that,
yeah,
$100 million was huge. And The Visit wasn't just found footage. I mean, like that the conceit is that girl made that movie,
sure,
and edited, yeah, it together, and it was done. What found footage is, or should be, or was done in the Blair Witch Project, is,
sure,
literally, we found this stuff and we, yeah, edited it together to give it a little bit of a narrative through line. It's like one of those like World War II History Channel things where they're like, this is live footage that was shot on the beaches.
Sure.
And but I mean, it's,
so the author is unknown is what you're saying. Wow. Yeah. Okay. You're right. The Visit. Right.
And this
falls
this
in.
Is
it does
so
not conform.
Right. Like, If you're saying something about like a shot choice in The Visit, you're technically saying it about that girl. I don't ever,
sure,
feel in this movie like these characters are shooting. Like, and one of the problems with this movie is that the Blair Witch Project had, what was it? It was a DV camera, a Super 16, or a 16,
yeah,
millimeter and a Super 8 or something. It was all very distinctive. And in this movie, it is incredibly difficult to know,
to tell which
sure, one is which.
Unless it's a black and white,
right,
camera.
So that's just another problem. And at a certain point, it just becomes, just make a movie. Like, if you're not using the found footage to tell the story of the people shooting it, like the Blair Witch Project does, then why bother doing it at all? If,
yeah,
you're just going to post these things in people's ears, then you're not going to be able, like one of the things about the Blair Witch Project is like, you can tell that some of those people are more willing to look than others. Mm. And in this movie, it's literally like, here, you're just basically going to get to see whatever's in my fucking field of vision.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, there's no one
see
who
what I see
expresses themselves through the camera. Because they can't, because this is a directed movie, and bothering with the found film conceit is pointless at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we should go ahead and jump into spoilers. I don't know if we have all that much,
sure,
to talk about, but yeah,
probably not. I just want to, I mean, I'm obviously saying don't see this. It's aggravating people doing stupid things while loud noises happen around them for like an hour and a half. Bill, would you say people should bother seeing this?
I would say if you're kind of a completionist and you definitely want to see kind of this story continued, go for it. You know, there's kind of a dearth of scary movies right now. So, you know, good on Blair Witch for kind of jumping on that. But
This year's supposed to be a renaissance.
Yeah, well, I mean, this year, but I'm saying like right now.
Sure.
Not so much.
You know, Bill,
like,
it's, you said something about being a completist, and I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
In the Blair Witch franchise, what would you say is like the overarching story? Like, did it feel important to you that this was Heather's brother from the first film?
Oh, fuck no.
Okay.
I did not give a shit because I knew all the entire point of this film is to get them into the woods, right? Like, I mean,
right,
that's the whole point. So I'm like, you know what, you can come up with whatever story. I didn't even know Heather had a brother. I don't think she ever mentions having a brother. I'm
no,
sure
I don't think so.
She might have said something in passing, but it's like,
I don't
you
think
know,
so either.
It's like, what? And then like, let's be honest, like it's been 28 years or whatever. Not 28 years, but, you know, it's been a little while. Right. She's not living in those woods alone if she's alive. And if she isn't alone, then you got other issues. Right.
Well, that's actually another thing that I didn't think to bring up. What do these people don't believe in the Blair Witch, do they?
Yeah, no, none of them believe in the Blair Witch
except
at all.
Except for the locals.
And
yeah, the locals.
I guess, I mean, even
what is
they...
he thinking? She's, like, just been lost for 16 years and
yeah,
she's fine?
Yeah, yeah, that she's okay. Yeah, sure, that she's fine. And it's like, what? What are you even thinking?
Because
he
never says, like, I want to find
that
her
climax
body.
Is baffling.
He never says, I want to find her body. He's like, oh, I need to find my sister.
Yeah,
it's so weird. Michael Snydell, what would you, as far as going to see this in theaters, what would you tell a friend, someone you care about?
Someone you care about.
Really trying to make it make me feel guilty about this one, huh?
Pretty much. Yeah.
For what it's worth, actually, you guys are definitely swaying me.
Yay.
After thinking about it more.
High five, Bill.
I think it's fine. Maybe when it comes to Netflix, maybe when it comes to iTunes or Redbox, you know, honestly, there's some good scares in it, and there's some kills in it too.
I usually am a pretty easy lay for
that.
A horror movie, just because I'm afraid of being afraid, if you know what that's like. Like, I get anxiety at the thought of seeing a horror movie because I don't like the feeling of being afraid. It took me, like, 7 minutes to realize that this movie wouldn't scare me, and then it never did. It never won me back.
Sure.
So that's another problem I had. I didn't think it was scary at all.
Here's my easy suggestion. Okay. Avoid this film.
Yep.
Go see The Guest.
Okay.
Guest is fun.
All right, well, let's get into spoilers.
Wait, guys, I wanted to start a question of spoilers. And that would be one thing that, honestly, a lot of reviews have focused on. But since we're in spoilers, we can get into a little bit.
Okay.
Would you guys like this movie better if it did not have the baggage of Blair Witch?
No.
Do you like any of the mythology? Do you like any of the ideas here?
No. I'll say this. One of the things that's effective about the Blair Witch Project is how it refers to and alludes to a mythology without ever fully explaining it. Because it makes it feel, again, real to me. It makes it feel like these people are out in the woods.
It's omniscient.
Right. They're doing their thing, but they already assume that there's some knowledge of this. And I never needed to know more. Or if I wanted to learn more, I would have wanted to learn just more facts outside of what I already knew. And this movie does nothing but refer back to things from the first film, like Rustin Parr and Coffin Rock and all that. And so it's not like it's pulling from a deep mythology. It's like it's referring to a previous film. It's like in Star Wars talking about Darth Vader and the Death Star. It's not making me feel like we're in a world. Like if this is a real thing, there should be so much to pull from, and there's not.
Yeah, and you would think it's interesting because they keep talking to these locals and they're asking them about like the mythology and stuff like that, and you're like, wait. So why aren't y'all like super up on the mythology and like why is this conversation happening now? Like, shouldn't y'all like come in and be documentarians and like know your research and know all this stuff about the Blair Witch and stuff like that, and know that maybe some of the people that get lost because they lose track of days, or you know, things like this happen, or things like that happen. And it's like, again, what's frustrating is they literally show up and they're like, hey, we're going to go camp in these forbidden woods. I don't know how to start a fire and I don't know how to pitch a tent, but I'm going to go ahead and do this. And we're going to spend like a couple of days in the woods. And you're just like, I don't like, you bought all this technology, but you didn't put any practical application of like learning how to camp and learning how to do
that. Seems
like
so fucking realistic.
That
to
goes
me.
no. This goes back. This goes back, Bill, to what I said previously, where these don't feel like people on a mission, on their own mission that gets subverted by murder.
Yeah,
they feel like people who are just going into the woods to die.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I gotta get my pack on and go out in the woods and die now.
Bye,
Mom. According to the narrative context, Peter and Ashley are there for James just to finally get closure here.
Sure.
But that's so weird because like they never really like explain that out. Like here's the thing that every person who wants to do a found footage movie should do. They should talk to a documentarian and say, if this was what you were doing, what would your steps be for the days and weeks leading up to it? Because this girl, Lisa, I think. Yeah,
she's
Lisa's
a student.
But it's like, did she go to class? Like, she doesn't. Nothing in this movie feels like something that could have ever been in a documentary. Like, she doesn't have any real interviews with the other two people. Even her interview with James is like super basic, and it just feels like if you put a little more into it, then maybe it would be better. Like, show us some of her like trying to frame up an establishing shot, or sure, like of the town. You know, we get like these things where she walks into the woods so she can shoot them through trees. And that's like it as far as our concept of her as a documentarian. So again, that removes the found footage conceit, because now you're just like, again, I'm just waiting for these people to die because that's obviously why they're here.
Yeah. Yeah. They're fodder for the killing fodder for the witch, I guess. I don't know. Like, I was kind of interested in seeing this kind of mythology kind of further play out. But I didn't want it to come from more locals speaking about some of the same things. I wanted it to come from them having done the research, having been like, hey, let's go find your sister. And by the way, look at all these pages on Wikipedia I just printed out. Like, here's all the information, right? Like, I never feel like they're coming into this with any information except, hey, this dude named whatever his handle on YouTube is.
Oh, it's like Darknet666.
Yeah, something like that. And you're
with
just like
fucking Confederate flag.
I thought, okay, there were few and far between as far as like laughs, but that killed me.
I thought this was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
I was just like, oh man, this is
you
perfect.
Know what's weird is that never
Peter
really played
good
into
lines.
Anything.
Huh?
That didn't really play into anything. Like,
no,
it
did. Like the black guy is angry at him for being angry, like just doing stupid shit. Like, it's never a racial thing or anything like that. It's just like
it feels like the
he's uncomfortable at the beginning, though.
He's like uncomfortable for 12 seconds, but like, there's not a point where like
no, they have a conversation about it though.
But I wanted
they all have a conversation about whether they should come with them.
That's so basic, though. I needed Lane's like undercurrent of racism to erupt, you know, like I needed, first of all, sending Lane and Talia out into the woods alone is a dumb choice because they're conflict machines. They should be there this whole time. Lane and Peter should have a racial disagreement where Lane is an awful human being who has a Confederate flag. Like, you never, like, Lane doesn't even say anything that is openly racially uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, he never says anything racist at all.
And I feel like that's kind of the point, though. It's
what?
Just supposed to be that, no, but I think, I don't know, I think you guys wanted a lot of these characters to fall into much more cliched horror tropes. Like, I'm not going to say that these characters are fleshed. I'm not going to say these characters are fleshed out, but I will say that, like, I like that a lot of these things are just kind of unsaid. Or, for instance, like Lisa and James, their connection. Like, there's a number of things that they just don't. Okay, I'm just making an example here.
Okay,
but I think the thing, like, the Confederate flag is not like. Is not like, oh, he's just waiting for his moment to say something, you know, to say something diehard racist, but it's just supposed to be. Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go.
Well, you said he's like waiting for his moment to say something diehard racist. What I'm saying is
I said he's not.
No, I know. What I was going to say is when, like you were saying yourself in the original Blair Witch Project, they get lost. And then they get angry at each other. And that was like a flashpoint for a good, I threw that fucker in the creek scene where, like, if they're lost and, like, you know, Peter says to Lane, like, you fucking dumbass hillbilly cracker son of a bitch, you got us lost. And then Lane whips out some horrifying racial thing. And then that's just more anger and more tension that they're going to have to heap on top of their already bad situation. But instead, we get Lane tying sticks together. It's like they're. Oh, I thought that was Mike. I thought that was you sighing for a second. I was like, all right,
nope,
fine,
just
I'll stop.
The car.
And then it became very mechanical, and I was concerned. But I mean, it's just there's so much personality that should be on display. And all we get is, like, that Peter is incompetent in the woods and gets angry, and Ashley has a coat on her foot. That's literally all of her character development. And Lane is sort of a nitwit, and Talia is, I don't know, like, I guess shy, sort of?
Yeah, kind
it's
of.
Just like, there's just nothing there. Like, they literally are just different faces waiting to be shoved into a corner while someone dies.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's lame. What was up with her foot? By the way, did she pull out of herself?
I was thinking it was like it looked partly like a bone, and then I was thinking it looked like a centipede, and I don't even know what the fuck it was.
I was really hoping that it
was.
That's
what my girlfriend said as well.
Yeah.
What?
All the women in our lives seem to think that it
centipede.
Was a centipede.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a centipede-like looking thing, but
so did it.
But I mean, it definitely had more of like a. It looked like a piece of the woods more than anything, right?
Yeah, and I thought it was like a sapling or something.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely something growing in her foot that is more plant-like than insect-like, and I was just like, whoa, like. And I saw the Rings trailer before this.
Yeah.
And so you see her like pull out like a glob of hair out of her throat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, is this going to turn into like maybe she's going to pull this thing out. And then she pulls it all the way out and it turns into a stick man or something like that. And I'd be like, whoa, you know, that'd be crazy.
I was,
but
well, I was expecting the witch's
it.
Hands like, to come out of her foot.
Sure, something crazy. Like have fun with that. Like if you're gonna give me that, go with it. But
problem is that it's like a weird bit of body horror in a film that initially again was just about being scared and lost in the woods, and the weird shit that goes on in the periphery.
Yeah, like, I really don't understand what was going on with the foot, and I don't understand where ultimately they were going to go with it, because obviously they killed her in a manner that had nothing to do with her foot.
No.
Sure.
It was just a way to hobble her, I guess. And did the centipede crawl in her foot when... Well, no, she pulled it out of her thigh, or her calf, didn't she?
It moved up her leg.
Oh, okay.
What I got kind of like a feeling of.
So it crawled into her while she was in the river, and then it was just burrowing?
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah, it got cut and then something crawled into her foot. Now look, like I've seen Anaconda. So like there's some crazy shit in some woods, man, in some rivers and some lakes. So
Bill has
like,
never
you
been to the woods, but he's seen a lot of movies that involve woods.
There's some crazy shit out there, man.
Well, here's my thing is okay, again, talking about how loud this movie is, and this is funny in a dumb way, but doesn't really mean anything. Every time she falls, it sounds like a tree has snapped in half and was filled with beef.
I was getting some snap into a Slim Jim kind of commercial, like, oh my God, like, what is that noise? Why do they keep doing that? Does nobody else hears that? Like, I would just be like, girl, you need to stop walking right now and just like your collapse, foot is because that sounded terrible.
It sounds like your foot ripped in half. It sounds like someone ripped your foot in half. What did we think about? Okay,
the weird thing about Brian, you're probably going to get into the same thing as me, actually. Go ahead.
Well, now I'm concerned I'm not going to get into the same thing as you. I was going to ask what we thought about the ending in the house and seeing the spindly armed and legged witch.
You mean Slender Man?
Yeah. I thought that was horrible. Like, what a waste.
I don't know. As soon as they go into that house, I'm just like, oh, holy shit. Really?
And that,
like,
did anyone else think Heather was going to be in that that almost catacomb hole tunnel thing?
No.
Like, Heather is like a possessed, I don't know.
I couldn't wait for her to get out of that fucking catacomb because I'm like, what a waste of time this is.
Yeah.
And again, this is me. I was talking about how terrified I was during the descent before the monsters even showed up. And in this movie, a similar scene, I was just like, just get out because I know you're not going to die here.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, actually, can you imagine if it was a found footage film? And like, we all know they're all going to die, right? Like, none of us had any illusions. If one of the people died violently.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Oh, really? You thought someone was going to get out?
I thought Lisa was going to get out.
Oh, well. No, I was thinking, wouldn't it be crazy if this movie ended, like, and it said 5 days later, and it just cut to Lisa still being stuck below ground, starving to death?
Oh, Jesus. That would be your finale, I can tell.
Because it's like a found footage movie, and it's like, oh, we found these, and she was dead, and it just took her a super long way to die. Because the problem with found footage is that people have to die immediately, otherwise you've got to make up for the fact, like, why is this camera watching this person die over the course of 7 days stuck in a hole?
Sure.
But no, I felt like, again, one of the things that made the Blair Witch Project so effective and what made it horrifying for me is that I was a Boy Scout. I was like 13 years old and I would go out and camp in those woods. And it wasn't like I could tell myself, oh, you know, it's preceded by a flash of light and the creature is 18 feet tall, so obviously it's not real. The scares were piles of rocks, clapping sounds out in the woods, and the occasional stick figure man. Which, you know, those are horrifying. Like, those are just basic, aside from the stick figure man, tenets of being in the woods. And this movie was like, it's such a waste. It's such a fucking waste. Also, it's very obvious that this one was not filmed in the woods of Maryland.
Some of it was, actually. Some of it was actually filmed in Burkittsville.
Boom.
Well, I mean, like, where they're camping and everything, no. Like,
I can't tell you that because
I'm assuming, I mean, I'm not going to look it up because that sounds crazy. Oh, no, filming locations, Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yes, and then keep reading.
I know, but what I'm saying is that a lot of those woods had that. Oh, wait, Los Angeles, California. So that's it.
So
that's showing all two filming locations, Los Angeles, California and Vancouver, British Columbia.
Let me see here.
I'm just looking.
What are you
IMDb.
Looking that up?
IMDb. So what I'm saying is, and this is something that no one who's not me will notice because who else who listens to us has gone camping in the woods in Maryland? Tweet at us. Let us know. But it was just like, well, you're in like a Pacific Northwestern rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is a small thing, but for me, it took me out.
Yeah.
I really don't know if I have anything else to say about this movie.
Well, one thing we haven't talked about at all is the fact that the mythology actually does become something? What happened to the witch in the original Blair Witch Project actually becomes, you know, why the forest is a fucker to all these people.
Mm-hmm.
So did you guys have any feelings about that?
Completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just learning more about it like I said earlier, it doesn't help me. It doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, and I did misspeak. It was the original that I guess I was confusing with the remake or the sequel. The original
project was definitely filmed here.
Yeah, it was also filmed in the real town of Burkittsville. So
yeah,
yeah. Okay. as far as the mythology, I think it was interesting that they kind of played into it and that it kind of wrapped itself up in a way that, I don't know, I had flashbacks of like Medusa and stuff like that when I was just like, really, like what are you doing? Like, why are you trying? And then she hears his name.
It's like, oh, come
on. And she hears him say something like, I'm sorry, Lisa. And she like turns around and you're just like, what? Like, like you know, he just died. Like, you know, he just got crunched and you're going to turn around when you hear his name. Like, no, don't do that. I was wanting her to actually do that on purpose because like what I wanted was to have that constant noise going on. And for her to just realize, okay, cool. So I'm just going to have to sit in this corner forever while the guy that I really kind of liked just died in front of me. No, I'm just going to take the fast way because this ain't worth it. Right.
Yeah.
Like I was waiting for her to just like look over and just be like, okay, well, he's gone. Here we go. You know, like, but no, the way that she's kind of suckered into it, I was just like, ah, come on. You're smarter than that.
Well, you'd think she would be.
But no,
like, did it do anything for you? Did you like it?
I don't know. I mean, it would have to be more developed, but I do like the idea. I don't know. I do kind of like the idea of the forest being hostile and, you know, especially when it goes back to.
But the forest is hostile. Like, you know what I'm saying?
That's what okay. You're saying hostile on its own without literally having to, you know, swamp you or anything.
Well, I guess what I mean is like in the original, the woods alone are hostile. And then it was very clear in the original that they were hostile a little bit more in this particular area. And I just don't need a reason for that because she's a witch, you know, and they're entwined with nature, you know, as we saw in The Witch this year. And, you know, I don't need a reason for that. I don't need to know that, like, the thing is possessed by a person who went through X. It's just like, no, I can accept that a witch, when killed by a town who vows revenge, has some powers and probably the wilderness is her home. So what you were saying about the deepening of the mythology, it doesn't really help in any way. And really, it kind of only hurts because it feels a little more movie-esque to know why.
Sure. Well, I'm going to say something very unfair here, but I have to say, listening to both of you, I'm not sure that you guys would be happy with this sequel in almost any context other than if it tried to imitate the visual sensibility of the first one. I know I'm, again, making a huge generalization, but right. I guess what I'm trying to get at is from hearing, especially you, Brian, is I get the sense that the modern 2016 version of Blair Witch, I get the sense that it's a proposition that is unappealing to you from pretty much any context.
Well, I know, because I was super excited about this film. One moment, my daughter's freaking out.
No, it's fine.
I'll say that when I found out about Blair Witch, I was like so excited that I was telling my wife and my mother, who was here at the time, about it. I was real on board. Again, because they said, like, hey, we went and we did this right. And I don't think they did. And I don't know if part of it has to do with the fact that I think having him be related to Heather was an issue. I felt like that's another one of those sequel things that's just, you make the world too small. You know, like, just have it be, if you need it to really be connected to the other one, have it be Blair Witch 15 years later, like a documentary crew goes out to do it all over again and makes a whole new
mistakes. Some crazy conspiracy theorists.
That would also be awesome. But instead, you know, we got, oh, Heather's brother that we never heard about is going out there. And I'm surprised that one of the other people wasn't like, hey, we got Derek's brother. I don't remember any of the other guys' names. It doesn't have to be aesthetically the same, because we do have whole new things. Like, having that drone is a great idea. Having someone with a DSLR is fine. Have someone record on their phone. Like, that's cool too. But we didn't, you know, instead we got ear cameras, which is a baffling choice. Like, I don't know why you would do that.
Wait, what is the both of you have now cackled when you were talking about the ear cameras. Yes, it strains credulity. Is that the problem?
No, I don't have any issue with it. Like, it's just a dumb commentary that like that we wouldn't notice that looks exactly the same as an earpiece that I've owned.
Well, it's also like
what? Like,
those aren't things out in the world. So, like,
yeah,
it's a level of artifice that the movie shouldn't be working with. And then, like, if we're finding this footage, like, what the witch, like, had the presence of mind to turn them off after she took her hostages?
Yeah, I don't know what that's about either.
I was really expecting two things out of those earpiece cameras. One of them would be that we would start to see from the perspective of the people who'd been killed or taken. The other would be that someone would get decapitated and we would see, like, their shoes, and then their headless body would fall into frame. I'm not upset that I didn't get that last one, but
the one situation that really kind of hit me, I gotta say, was Talia's death. That was weird.
Yeah,
that was that was everything I kind of wanted out of this movie's own tone. With how, like, ratcheted up everything was when she died, I was like, okay, almost the entire movie is worth it now because of that sequence. Like, because that was crazy. And the way that they react to it, I was like, yes. I just wish...
That was my least favorite part of the movie.
I love that part because they totally flip out at that moment. And what I wished had happened was they had spent a little bit more time having them freak out instead of having the witch immediately attack him right then and there.
Right. Yeah.
Because then everybody scatters, and all of a sudden the drama, the kind of mental aspect of that is just a wash at that
point. It's not like they're never getting picked off one by one. Like, the assault happens and it's immediate. And so there's no mounting tension like in the original. It's just, these people are dumb and I don't like watching them. Oh, thank God they're all starting to die. I don't know. That's about it. Cora, do you have anything to say?
Yeah.
No, she's good.
I mean, there's little things in the film that I wish were either tweaked or just kind of done away with. I think overall it's just like, I don't know. There's sequences that work. There's sequences that just really, really just irritate me. And I think part of it is maybe some of this genre is getting a little tired. But I think part of it is just this genre has evolved to a point where the really good movies that do this well. And you know, I'm talking about like the Paranormal Activities. I'm talking about things like Wreck. They seem to continuously like go after options that seem fairly smart, right? And in this film, I just don't get the intelligence of the main characters. And I'm fine. I've seen a lot of horror films where people do dumb things all the time. That's fine. But again, to make a sequel like this, and like I said, you know, and Brian's kind of hitting on it, you know, continuously, but it's like, okay, you're a documentarian and you didn't do any research about this area. You know, like, it really feels like they are lambs for the slaughter, and it wouldn't be an issue if they were like kooky friends that were really interested in the story and just like, were like, hey, let's go find this dumb guy that thinks he found like a DV tape of this situation and whatever. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, let's go with this stupid ride. But instead it's like, no, these people knew her, right? They're the brother, and there's the best friend that searched for the sister, and it's like, okay, so y'all have things at stake. Like, I just wish y'all would do a little bit more research and a little bit more preparation if you were gonna go out into the woods and try and find this house that authorities who searched for like 3 days couldn't find. Right, so you're gonna have to go into those woods pretty far to find this place.
Well,
it's not
that reminds me. It's kind of annoying that Peter says he's been there, and that would be, they could have done anything at all with that.
Yeah, yeah.
My other thing is like, why not make it a documentary about people going to talk to the guy who posted the YouTube video? Like, have it be like a running TV series, like Vice, but you know, like Conspiracy Watch.
Mm-hmm. So The Sacrament.
I haven't seen The Sacrament yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either.
I really like that one, actually.
But yeah, I know kind of the conceit of The Sacrament and things like that. But yeah, no. I think had they kind of played it a little bit different instead of trying to connect it. Because again, like the whole idea that his sister is just out there in the woods just fine is just mind-boggling, right? It's just like, what? Seriously? Like, what are you doing? So,
yeah.
I mean, the whole premise of it falls before you even, like, continue telling the story. Because, you know, you're like, but wait. And I'm like, no, your sister's dead. Like, there's not a whole lot of ways to get around this. She's been in the woods for 16 years
by herself.
It's like
such a flimsy, excuse. He, like, sees half a frame of someone's face, and he's like, that's my sister. I'm going out to find... It's just dumb.
Because person looked like a witch. I was just like,
oh, is that the witch?
Her face is red, and her eyes are bright white. Like, what are you looking at that I'm not seeing? Because I see a witch in that photo. And I did think it was kind of interesting that, okay, so let's have some fun with this. I don't know if y'all saw it, but the Lisa definitely comes by and shoots that same mirror.
Yeah, Bill, that's like the twist, is that that's her video.
Okay, so it's eating, it's the snake eating its tail.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So. Are we done? We've been talking for way too long about this movie.
Yeah, I still don't understand that in part, but I don't really want to talk about it.
Don't worry about it. It's a time thing, basically. They shot that video, the witch put it out so they could find it, so they could come there to shoot the video and die.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, that still doesn't make sense, but yeah, cool. It's cool.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense. So that's it for today. Sully won the weekend, so odds are no one saw this movie. And more I'm like, why didn't we talk about Sully, since apparently everyone's watching that?
Sully's pretty good.
So that's it for today. Let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. First, let me remind everyone that you can get yourself a month free of Mubi, MUBI.com, the streaming online cinema. We talked about Stray Cat Rock, which is just awesome, and I'm probably going to go put my daughter to bed and watch another one. And you can get your free month by going to MUBI.
They're all under 90 minutes.
Yeah, like,
there's no greater.
they're fantastic. It's MUBI.com/filmstage. And yeah, find us on iTunes, give us a comment, give us a rating, subscribe to us, and that's all. So let's tell the people where we can be found between now and next time. Bill Graham, let's start with you.
You can find me definitely not sitting in the corner on Twitter at CableBFG, and you can also find me writing about movies on The Film Stage and also FreshFiction.tv.
All right, Michael Seidel.
You can find me losing my drone in a tree at on Twitter at Snidel. I also write things. I'll be recapping Atlanta for the rest of the season on Paste. And at Film Stage, I'll have something on the Decalogue soon.
All right. And you can find my review of The Vessel, which is out in limited release now, at thefilmstage.com. You can find me, I don't know, doing stupid dumb shit in the woods on Twitter, at Brian J. Rowan, and find more of my writing and stuff at thefilmstage.com as well. Also, I can be found trying to wrestle this small child who's currently trying to crawl out of my arms. All right, that is all for today. Ladies and gentlemen, oh my God, I'm getting choked by my own daughter. The Blair Witch has got me. Thank you for joining us. I'm about to be murdered by a 3-month-old.
Don't look at her.
Join us next time. Must be the season of the wind.